Hi there, everybody. You are listening to More Than a Wheelin', episode 28, and I'm feeling great because I got my old China plate in the house. My name is Sean M. Whelan, your host.
And I'm Tom Dockray.
Hi there, everybody. Welcome to More Than a Wheelin', a podcast about creative writing written by me, but most importantly, inspired by you. Hi, welcome to More on the Wheel. We are coming at you from Castaway Studios in sunny downtown Collingwood, the greatest suburb in the world, and I'm really damn pleased to be back in the Castaway Studios because I haven't been here for a few weeks. I've been recording on the road at various locations, but it's really good to be back in the studio. It's gone up a notch. We've got new Italian leather seats. We've got new Rode microphones, and it's looking pretty schmicko. Thanks, Derek. It's really lovely in here. And I've also got my old China plate mate, Tom Dockray, in the studio. Welcome to More on the Wheel, Tom.
Thanks, mate. It's really good to be here. I'm very impressed with the furniture.
Excellent. We aim to please here at More on the Wheel and Castaway Studios. Now, I should give our listeners a little bit of background on you before we probe deeper. I really like, there's some descriptions of you on the interwebs, and I think this one kind of nails it. I think Tom waits begrudgingly sharing Sunday dinner with a gabble of unwanted surprise guests like Elton John, Randy Newman, and Mississippi John Hurt. That's a pretty good bio description.
Yeah, look, I mean, I have absolutely no idea who wrote that, but...
Now, you're a singer-songwriter. I think, and this is always a good thing, actually. I think you're kind of hard to precisely nail down musically, genre wise, but it would definitely fall in a kind of folky guitar. But there are kind of pop elements to what you do as well.
I think there's things that come from, you know, I love playing guitar in a bluesy sort of a style, but I also love approaching it. You know, I really like figuring out like a Randy Newman song that he's played on piano. I really like figuring that out for guitar and approaching it sort of that way, with a almost like a two-handed approach you know, with sort of a bass part and a melody part, if that makes sense. And the way that he puts his song together is pretty, you know, pretty classic early 20th century, sort of like McCartney style of pop songwriting. And I love that approach blended with a bit of blues.
And just like Randy Newman, you have a wonderful dark sense of humour that comes to the surface in a lot of your songwriting as well.
Yeah, well, you know, life's pretty brutal, Sean.
Yeah. And that it is.
It's my way of coping with that.
Yeah, I dig that. Now, let's take a little trip in the Wayback Machine, firstly, and tell me how this all began. When did you first string a guitar around your neck and go along that path?
Well, I grew up in a little village called Lilydale in northeastern Tasmania, and I went to a tiny, tiny little primary school of about 25 students in a single building up on a mountain near Lilydale. And I was really good friends with three brothers, and we decided to form a band pretty much the minute we all discovered Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction.
Right,
we were about 10 years old, and we just had to be just like Guns N' Roses. So,
of course.
Yeah. So the school had some, you know, acoustic nylon string student guitars, and we worked out that we could put, we could reverse headphones if we could electrify these guitars by putting headphones on them and then somehow reversing the circuit through this sort of tape player, multi-headphone listening tape player device we had at school from the 70s. Anyway, but we were away. We were a rock and roll band from the minute we worked that out.
I really dig that. That's some really twisted schoolyard genius.
Yeah. We used
using
to
use headphones to amplify a guitar.
We were pretty creative. I mean, I wasn't the driving force, but there was one of the members of the band, he was pretty handy at making bombs and all kinds of backyard weapons and stuff.
Back when in a more innocent time of
when you were
bombs.
Allowed to blow shit up.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, bloody wars ruining everything. Continue.
So that was phase one, and I sort of went through my teenage years, sort of being the nerdy kid sitting in my bedroom alone, smoking a bit of pot and trying to learn every Metallica guitar solo, and then sort of got into my played in rock and roll bands right up until my sort of mid to late 20s, and I sort of got into playing, playing guitar. Maybe I just lost all my friends, and so I was just playing alone a lot.
So you did play in rock and roll bands because when I met you, you were doing the thing you're doing now.
Yeah.
So I didn't know you sort of pre that.
Yeah, I played in. Some rock and roll and sort of punky sort of bands.
Right.
Pretty much right the way through. Nothing that ever went anywhere. But lots of fun and lots of beers and.
And what switched you on to a different sort of genre?
I think the thing was that I sort of, I realized that there was a bit of a calling to write my own.
Yeah.
Songs. The way that came. I mean, I suppose I was probably, pretty heavily influenced by like the Johnny Cash American recordings and stuff. That I think that was sort of what was in my ears a lot at the time when I was going through that, I really want to actually be the guy who writes the songs now, rather than...
Well, those Johnny Cash, Rick Rubin recordings were a big game changer, I think, for a lot of people, because they kind of presented that that Americana thing in a different light, I guess. Yeah.
I think with a little bit more of a pop sensibility to the production. I mean, the production is awesome in its simplicity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a doco coming out on Rick Rubin shortly, or maybe already is, that I would like to check out because he's a pretty fascinating guy.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah. So you start thinking, I'm gonna write my own songs. I want to be the front guy.
Yeah, it wasn't so much wanting to be the front guy. I mean, I've always been quite a little bit timid performing. I love it, but I particularly then when I also had no experience singing at all at that point.
Yeah.
So I was very, very terrified about, my voice.
Yeah.
And it's taken 10 years to finally become comfortable with that side of things. With the writing. That I've always really loved those sort of songwriters who have a bit of a humorous slant on or who can balance humor with real substance
and storytelling.
Totally. I guess what really excites me mostly is when a song, when I can feel like there are layers of meaning underneath the words. And you know, underneath humour, or the humour is underneath, or whatever. So, you know, John Prine in particular has been a real, you know, like, oh, I want to be able to do it like he does it.
Yeah, he's a wonderful, wonderful songwriter and a really, really great storyteller. Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Master of his craft. For sure. And he just played here recently. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see it. But
I heard it felt like, I mean, I don't live in Melbourne anymore, but it felt like everybody went to that show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, well, that segues to my next question, actually, because you do spend a bit of time in Europe and you've performed quite a bit over there. What sort of reception do you get over there to your stuff?
It's mixed. it can be a little hard. I mean, actually, it can be great. One thing that I have had to do is to learn to sing with a little bit more enunciation,
right?
Because I think it's very difficult for many Europeans who are not as exposed to Australian accents as they are American and British ones to understand when, you know, and sometimes I can really, really pack a lot of syllables into a smaller, you know, a small space. And so unless I'm really clearly enunciating everything, it can be a bit difficult for people, and then, you know, when you don't understand, I guess it's, you know,
it's not just difficult for Europeans, I reckon.
Yeah.
I remember one of the first times I went to America, a lot of people couldn't understand a word I was saying.
Oh, I've had this
one guy just
experience.
Stopped me and said, he said, "What's wrong with you?" Not like, "Oh, where are you from?" or you know, like, I think he thought that I was mentally unwell or something. And like, we're speaking the same language.
Yeah, I know.
But of course, we grow up on American TV, and
sure.
You know, so
I feel like,
and for a lot of people, they're not exposed to those to the Australian accent. I was just watching a little mini doco thing on the ABC online yesterday. Just came up at random in my feed about how difficult the Australian accent is for actors to mimic. And in fact, many say it's the most difficult one in the world because it is so unusual. Yeah,
sure. And a bad attempt at an Australian accent by an American is just the most wonderful thing.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, there's very few who have mastered it, actually. So yeah, it is quite funny when you go overseas and people just have that. You just ask for the most simple thing and they just look at you blankly, like, what? What did you even just say then?
Yeah. Well, I, you know, living in Europe now, I absolutely nullify my accent most of the time. You know, it only takes a minute of speaking with an Australian to slip back into regular vowels and sort of thing. But yeah, if I'm, you know, if I'm ordering something or whatever in Denmark, I have to I have to neutralize my accent to get by.
Yeah. I don't even know how I would do that. Just flatten it down a little bit. Flat pack your voice.
I think it's all about, I think to make it easy for people, you need to pronounce every letter in the word, rather than these sort of things. You have to speak a little bit like Siri, you know?
I will remember that on my next trip to Europe. I'll let Siri do all the talking for me. So where was I going? I don't know where I was going. You've moved back to Tassie, is that correct?
No, not quite.
Not quite.
We're lucky enough to have a place that we've just bought a little bit of land in Tassie, and we're
bless.
Yeah. Oh, it's in a beautiful little pocket of the world near where my parents live. And so we're at the moment, we're back in the country just slapping a coat of paint on that and polishing up the floors and mowing the lawns. And and then we're going to, you know, rent it out and and stuff and become, you know, another cog in the wheel of Australia's housing crisis.
Good on you. Good on you, mate.
Yeah.
So you're going to go back to Europe and then...
Oh, yeah. Well, no, we're absolutely... We're in Europe. We're in Copenhagen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I live there with my wife, Anna. And it's great. I mean, I feel like as much as I miss the balls out of Australia, but I've got more to do in that part of the world before I'm ready to come back.
Yeah.
You know?
And to have that little slice of Tasmanian paradise there for you when you want it, it's a pretty fucking good deal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's about, it's a good hand.
Yeah.
We've been dealt.
So getting back on to your music, when did you first put something out as a recording?
Well, I was in a band called Dead Fred's Left Head. That was with the three brothers.
That's a great name.
The Wilson brothers of Lilydale, Tasmania, and we released a 5-track EP that was sort of thrash metal. Late 90s. It would have been 8-ish. Because we had the internet, so it must have been 98-ish, I think. That was a cool experience. But I didn't write those songs. I wrote some blistering guitar solos.
I bet you did.
That was sort of my first foray into releasing music. And I can't even remember if we... There was a website at the time, mp3.com.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
and we were charting on that, so we weren't selling anything, but we were charting on that for a
charting,
while.
Charting, going for the roof.
Pretty exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, nothing ever really came of it, but we played a few gigs. We printed CDs and sold them, but I think it was. I mean, CDs were, you know, it wasn't as easy as going to Implant and getting 50 run off for $2.50 each then, you know. Someone's dad had a CD burner and we, you know, did them ourselves. And
That must be a little bit of a collector's item now. Dead Fred's Left Head, is that it?
That's the one.
All right. Yeah, well, I'm going to look that up on eBay. And then when did you first put out something under your name?
Yeah, sorry, that's probably what you were really asking.
No, I was very appreciative of learning about
that little anecdote.
Yes.
Little time capsule. I made an EP of the, you know, sort of the first half-decent songs that I wrote in 2015. Called The Iron Suit. And I actually made that in Nashville.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I did not know that. Right. Yeah.
I was there for a little while and met a guy and we were, you know, we were in his studio.
Yeah.
A week later and, you know.
Boom.
Boom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. And one of the things I like to do on More Than the Wheel is dive deep into creatives' minds about how they create, what is the process for songwriting for you? I know it's a big question. That's a big question.
No, I've got this in, I think. I write pieces of music and then... and then when I sit down to put words to it, it usually starts with the first line.
Mm.
I think some people, you know, that you could either have a concept in mind already and write and build around that idea. But for me, I prefer the I prefer what I end up with if I actually don't start with a concept. If I just find an opening line and write from that and work out from that what I'm.
That is exactly how I write most of my poetry too, actually.
Cool.
Yeah. It'll just be a first line and then it kind of blossoms out from there.
And it's I mean, I look, writing is I have a very much a love-hate relationship with it and loathe the thought of it 99% of my life.
Yeah.
But when in that in those moments where the first line has appeared and then it's just starting to flesh out and it's and there's like there's there are these branches that come out from that idea like oh this could and then this character that starts to form in it, you know, and
yeah,
and that's when, you know, it feels like lightning bolts are coming out of my ears and, you know, the everything smells great and the birds are chirping in the tree. You know, that's that's my happy place when I'm bouncing in that, you know, that's like when the creative magic is.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's no right or wrong way to write, but for me that just feels like a more organic process.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it doesn't always work. There's always the failed experiments. But because you just lay down that first image and then just see where your mind takes you.
Sure. Yeah.
Rather than trying to squeeze something into a pre-thought-out concept.
Totally. Yeah. But that's, I mean, that there's huge skill in being able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, yeah.
In being able to write to a brief.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and that can also be really fun, but that is it's a little bit like having a box around it, whereas the initial approach we just talked about is, you know, there's just
no parameters,
yeah. No limits, no rules.
And yeah.
That's, I mean, that's terrifying. But yeah. just getting that first step, you know, opens so many doors.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We're definitely on the same page there, my friend. Now, all this talk about music makes me want to hear you play some music. Would you like to do that for us?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Excellent.
This one is called Mean Mr. Sun. It's about a man who believes that the sun is a conspiracy dreamed up by marketers to sell people sunglasses.
I love it already.
I don't really sleep much at night. I lie awake in my bed, slowly going crazier. In my head I look to the stars for their guidance, but they don't shine on me. They're busy dancing with the moon, got the world at their feet. And mean Mr. Sun just burns on bright, and it forces me daily to protect my eyes from his glare behind a pair of sensible eyewear, conveying my wealth, class, privilege, and sartorial flair. But I won't be swindled by these big-ass pricks telling they can shove their products up their big-ass digs, up their big-ass digs. So go on, man, go ahead and sing his praises, but you know he ain't gonna save us. We're all slaves to some of the worst of the choices we made, and we got cooked before we knew it.
Just like the books, what really happened is we've fallen for some small-time crooks. But I won't be, no, I won't be swindled by these big-ass pricks. Tell them they can shove their products up their big-ass dicks, their big-ass dicks. Final diagnosis is that the son is depressed. He's literally been dwarfed by most of the rest of the stars in the galaxy, where trillions shine brighter. Indeed, he's just an excuse for a cigarette lighter. But I won't be, no, I won't be swindled by these big-ass pricks. Tell them they can shove the products up their big-ass dicks. I ain't gonna take another minute of this fucking bullshit.
Fantastic. Thank you, Tom. Do you reckon you got another one in the tank for us?
You bet I do, mate.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Because I am loving this right now.
This one is called... I'm going to do a song called Onions.
Beautiful.
Of December, I was trying to remember why to celebrate this year that had just gripped me by both ears, dragged me through the dirt until my lips they chapped and hurt, and I was searching for sweet onions. Sometimes you gotta eat a bit of dirt before you're gonna find a sweet onion. Compelled by mystic forces, I made a list of all my resources, and when I located my mouth, I moved my pieces all around. My teeth clicked into a smile. I guess it had been such a long while since I tasted any sweet onion. Sometimes you gotta eat a bit of dirt before you're gonna find a sweet onion.
No more subtract, no more divide. I'm heading forth, I'm gonna multiply. Gonna reel my sadness in and land a big fish once again. And you can plow a million fields, but nothing gonna change the way you feel till you find your sweet onion. Till you find yourself a sweet onion. Sometimes you gotta
gotta eat a bit of dirt. You gotta eat a bit of dirt. You gotta eat a bit of dirt before you're gonna find a sweet onion.
Yes, that was brilliant. Thanks so much, Tom, for those little musical numbers. That was an utter joy to witness and listen to. And you're actually playing tonight at Kaz Dirty Secrets, which is useless to our listeners because by the time we put this out, tonight will be in the past. Unless you're a Time Lord listening to the show, then you could just, I would recommend setting the dial in your TARDIS to this date at 9:30 tonight. But unless you're a Time Lord, it's useless information. Mm. So, yeah, how about that?
Well, yeah, first of all, you're very welcome. And, I guess it is interesting to be talking about something so pointless. But let's plug it anyway. So last week we were at the Kaz Retop's Dirty Secrets.
Yeah. How did it go?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
You were there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah. It was packed to the rafters. People were going bananas.
Yeah, what a crowd.
Great show, man. Congratulations. Yeah,
thanks,
congratulations.
Man. Yeah.
So now we're going to move on to another part of the show, which is a very essential component. Where
sensual?
Sensual as well, yes, very sensual, yes. Where I ask our listeners for creative prompts, and then I write poems based on those prompts. Now, I'm going to read out some of these prompts first because I got some real corkers this week when I did a little shout-out. Over the last week or so when I did a little shout-out on the Instagram. So we are on Instagram, More Than the Wheelin'. We are on the Facebooks, More Than the Wheelin'. I'm even on Twitter. Although I don't tweet very much. I should tweet more. I don't know. I find it hard to tweet. You can't do everything in life, can you? Or can you? I don't know. Some people seem to. But I think they've got like helpers like Beyonce. Like there's a meme that says, you know, Beyonce only has 24 hours in the day just like you. But what it doesn't explain is that she's also got a staff of about 20, you know.
Yeah, so, budget of $100 million.
Yeah, it's a little unfair to suggest you should be achieving everything Beyonce is achieving. Anyway, I got a bit sidetracked there. So I'm gonna read out some of the prompts. Here's one from Alicia. Sometimes Tennyson quote: "To strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield." Here's one from Heather Marsh. She goes by the name Brecken Music. Wonderful musician herself. How about a classic Metamorphosis? Oh, I struggle with that word. Here's one from Rebecca Hart. Tyrolene Curtain Fog. I don't even know what Tyrolene is. Do you know what Tyrolene is?
Sounds like some sort of a tea setting or something.
Oh, really?
But I could, yeah.
I thought it was kind of like a fabric. Sounds like a fabric.
Oh, sure.
Tyrolene.
Or colour?
Or maybe I'm just thinking that maybe it's association because of curtain. This is hilarious that we are sort of like doing what we used to do in the past before there was the internet. The internet has ruined everything, really, hasn't it? Because there's no mystery. Like you say, oh, what does that? And then seconds later, someone's Googled it and it's like, oh, okay, we know that now. Like my producer Derek just has, and it is the first polyester fabric ever produced. Wow. That's a pretty amazing fact, actually. Was painted in 1941 by British inventor John Rex Winfield? Have a Winfield. We're not advertising tobacco on this show. Don't call in. Don't complain.
Although if they've got an offer on the table.
Yeah, true.
We'll
okay. I'm open to offers. Yeah, let's put it that way. So we both learned something today.
Mm.
Yeah, Tyrolene. I don't even know if I'm saying that. So polyester. Well, you know, many great suits and shirts are made out of polyester. I own many of them myself. I'm wearing a brand new shirt today, actually, which I'm pretty happy with.
That is a beautiful shirt.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I wasn't baiting for compliments, but thank you. Claire Lenson did More Than Mother. And then Amy. No, hang on. I'll go back to Amy because she's the one I responded to. Penny Penny Omar from Canada, somebody I've never met, but I've had a long relationship with on the internets. I think we first became friends through our mutual blogs. It's like been a long, long time. She's been a wonderful contributor to the show with her prompts. This one is a poem in itself, actually, really. I don't know how I could make this better, so I'm going to read this out. Grocery shopping is always a date. In the beginning, it's coloured by whimsy and curiosity and peppered with me toos and laughter. In the middle, it's all that is affordable and a relief if the kids can't come. In the end, from what I've seen, it's people watching, reminiscing and taking time to discuss the nuances of avocados, always an underlying dialogue. Wow. I can't even improve on that. Steve Smart said, remaking Caravan of Courage with Jason Mantzoukas as the voice of Wicket the Ewok. Wow. Yeah, I could go a long way with that one. So there's so many prompts, and just because I don't use one of these particular prompts this week doesn't mean I won't use it in the future. So they all go into my little prompt bank that's right next to my wank bank.
Which pile is bigger?
And sometimes, you know, I use them for different things. And
Interchangeable.
Interchangeable,
really.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. So Amy, bless her, she just threw lots of amazing prompts, actually. Parrotfish, veins, arteries, mud, clay, skin tone, dandelions, off the grid. And let's make this the last one, fingerprints, which is exactly the prompt that I decided to respond to. So this is the poem that I wrote, inspired by fingerprints. In your fingerprints, I see the path we've taken. You pushed your forefinger into the wet paint and then pressed it into the center of my palm. And there I am floating above it, like looking down at a hedge maze. There's the place we stopped to mend a flat tire on the freeway and ended up fucking on the back seat instead. There's the place you passed out drunk in a phone booth in your orange raincoat, and I had to find you in the rain like searching for a goldfish in a glass. There's the place we argued over a smashed avocado breakfast, and you smashed the avocado all over my face. There's the place we went on a tropical holiday, and you caught a fish in your bare hands before holding it up to the sun and declaring fish the new rulers of the planet before plunging it back into the water. There's the place the chemist had run out of your particular brand of antidepressant, so you squirted sunblock all over the counter and wrote safety first in the white goo with your finger. There's the place we forgot what our hands were for and our hearts were for, and we let our stupid words do the communicating for us instead. And there's your fingerprint in the middle of my palm, where I follow every stop to a full. And that's it. Thank you so much, Amy, for being our More Than a Whelan Muse of the Week. Trumpet sound. Ba 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 ba. Ba 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 ba. You're going to be getting some sweet merchandise. I'm going to send it to you. I don't know. I think you live overseas somewhere. You do live overseas. I can't remember where. But I'm going to wear that postage cost because it was worth it.
Same day delivery.
Yeah. Well, let's not get
you
carried
will have
away.
That in your hand today.
Yeah. Hopefully, maybe you live in Copenhagen and I can just throw it in your luggage, Tom. Thanks, mate. Yes, that's going to happen. I'm going to send it to you. And as I say every week, and it's true, that poem would literally not exist without you. Would literally not exist. Yeah. Is that what I said? I don't know. Let's jump to Whelan and Stealing. This is a segment of the show where I and my guest perform or read works from other writers that are floating their boat. And I believe that you may have something for us, Thomas.
Yeah, I thought I'd really like to try reading a John Prine song. as a poem.
Whose genius we spoke of earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't stress enough how much I get down on this man's words.
Mm.
And I'd really like to do this kooky song, That's the Way the World Goes Around.
Yeah.
If I may.
Please. Lay it on us.
I would like to just preface it with saying that there is a mild reference to domestic violence in this song, which is, of course, never cool.
Never. Thank you for that.
I think John here was trying to paint a picture of a man who's a fucking idiot.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we should discuss this before or after, but, you know, people need to remember people, they're telling stories, that that's not necessarily they're representing their beliefs.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's the way the world goes around. I know a man who's got a lot to lose, a pretty nice fella, kind of confused. Got muscles in his head that have never been used. Thinks he owns half of this town. He goes out drinking, gets a big red nose, beats his old lady with a rubber hose, takes her out to dinner and buys her new clothes. That's the way the world goes round. That's the way the world goes round. You're up one day, the next you're down. It's a half an inch of water and you think you're going to drown. That's the way the world goes round. I was sitting in the bathtub just counting my toes when the radiator broke and the water all froze. I was stuck in the ice without my clothes, naked as the eyes of a clown. I was crying ice cubes, hoping I'd croak, when the sun came through the window and the ice all broke. I stood up and laughed. I thought it was a joke. That's the way the world goes round. That's the way the world goes round. You're up one day, the next you're down. It's a half an inch of water, and you think you're going to drown. That's the way the world goes round.
Thank you very much, Tom. That is indeed the way the world goes round, partly full of lightness and partly full of darkness, unfortunately. But that is the way of it. Okay, so for Wheelin' and Stealin' this week, I'm going to read a poem by a poet called Matthew Roth. Matthew's a poet that he's in New York, but he does have family in Melbourne. In fact, he'll be visiting Melbourne soon, and he's a wonderful poet. He does all sorts of things. He's got some novels out. The way I met him was through the performance poetry scene, whatever you want to call it. So he's definitely done a lot of that, but he does a lot of other different writing as well. And he works as a creative writer at Google at the moment, where he makes games for children. Previously, he was a screenwriter at Sesame Street. He's collaborated on 30 video games, the creators of Minecraft, League of Legends, and Thomas Was Alone. So this poem is called Subway Birds. A beach is no place for loners. Everything is carnivorous mussels, ripped from shells by savage white birds. Impossibly smooth skin you could curl, ashamed the size of a grain of sand. The ocean is where we thrive 60% water. A few more drops in the lungs won't change much. Virginia Woolf walked calmly. Nothing else was calm. To be becalmed is to be abandoned by even the sea. Finally, in the homeward station, birds peck their way onto trains. No suspicion. Once you're in their bellies, no expectation to be taken somewhere new. Upheaval gifted with Manhattan dreams of every school child and no hatchling. Boom. Thank you, Matthew. I'll drop some links to some of his work in the show notes. So now it's on to the world of Whelan.
Wow.
Still cracks me up every time. I've got a little bit of an announcement to make. So I am a co-producer of a show called Liner Notes Live. And what we do is we put on these shows that are kind of like tributes to classic albums of our time. We've done Nirvana, Madonna, Fleetwood Mac. And the basic concept of the show is we choose a performer for every track on the show, on the album, and we ask performers who we think would do something interesting to respond to that track. So it's like a tribute night, but all this original work comes out of it. And I'm very pleased to announce that we'll be taking Liner Notes live to the Adelaide Cabaret Festival, and we'll be doing two albums. We'll be doing David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust, and we'll also be doing the Blues Brothers soundtrack, which we've never done before. We've done David Bowie before, but it's always a different show because we, even if you do the same album, because of the guests, the different guests. Now, the tickets aren't available for that yet, but that will be dropping online soon, the program for that, and I'll let you know more about that when that happens. Now, Tom, Doug Ray, what's happening in your world?
Well, I am in Australia for the next couple of weeks. I am playing in Melbourne this weekend, which people will miss by the time they hear this.
Correct.
But I am doing a weekend run of shows in Tassie.
Wonderful.
On April 11, 12 and 13 with some illustrious other musicians from Melbourne, Mitch Power and Rose Cedar Falco.
Oh, that's some big names.
There's
right there.
Big heavy hitters there.
Yeah, heavy hitters, that's right.
They were heavily hitting the beers last night, and no doubt this weekend will be no different. But we're playing. And oh, sorry, also Jen Myers from Brisbane is joining us. She's got a great podcast on country music called Three Chords and the Truth.
Yes, I've heard about that.
Actually, it's not a podcast. It's syndicated nationally.
Yes,
I think,
that's right, yeah.
Out of 98.9 in Brisbane. Yeah, they do a great job. Her and Patty McHugh, another great songwriter from Queensland, they are joining us for these shows in Tassie. We're doing one at the Maricopa Caves on Thursday the 11th, which is amazing because we're doing a gig inside a cave.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they do that occasionally. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be telling the world that. But anyway, so that'll be amazing. You know, they light it up and the acoustics in there
insane.
Are obviously really, really cool. So that's about an hour out of Devonport. And then we're doing a show at the chapel at the Lala Flower Farm where actually,
yes.
Sean, you married my sister.
I did indeed. That and that chapel is so insanely beautiful.
Yeah.
I really want to be at that gig. Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's on my parents' property. They've sort of set their farm up to have weddings and built an open air chapel in the bush, and it's just lush green through all the windows, and
yep.
The structure they built is beautiful, and it's pretty special. So that's at Lala on the 12th of the Saturday, Saturday the 13th, and where are we? Sunday. Oh, look, these dates are all wrong, but that weekend approximately on the Sunday, we're also down at Pelverata, at the Pelverata Hall for a big day. Claire Ann Taylor's joining us for that one too. That's sort
great.
Of down near Signet.
I'll drop some links to those events
in
the show notes.
If you're in Tassie, come and have a
for sure. And if you're not, go to Tassie because it's always worth your while, right?
Mm.
Yeah, I reckon that. So, yeah. Thank you, Tom. It's been such a pleasure having you here in the studio, in the Castaway Studios.
It's beautiful to be here and just catch up with your gorgeous face, mate, because
you are a gem.
I missed you. And it's great to be in this studio with these fancy new chairs.
Does your butt feel nice in them?
Yes. My ass has actually never felt quite so content.
That's what we like to hear.
That's what you aim for.
Yeah, that's exactly what we aim for here. Look, speaking of, thank you very much to Castaway Studios and my producer Derek Myers, without whom I would not be here. Use many of their services, of which there are many. So you could be a podcast star like me. Just hit up Castaway Studios and they can make all your dreams come true. And also very, very many thanks to to Lux Country, who are a generous supporter of this show, who make an amazing range of merch. They make it with their own precious hands, top quality stuff. New player in the merch scene. So if you're in a band, if you're in anything, if you want to do anything on a t-shirt or a cap or a koozie, aka stubby holder, please hit up Merch Lux Country. And also please go to our, we've got a little online store there with More Than a Wheel and merch. You can get yourself a More Than a Wheel and cap. In fact, I'm going to give you a More Than a Wheel and cap today.
Ooh, I was hoping you'd say that because it's a sunny day out there, Sean.
I'm going to give you one and I'm going to take a photo of that. It's your lucky day. And but you can also purchase one online. And please consider that because it goes a way towards supporting what we do on here. We give you this content free of charge, but if you'd like to throw some support back our way, we'd greatly appreciate it, and you get this wonderful stuff in return. Thank you for listening to More Than a Wheelin'. It's been a hoot. Wheelin' out.
That awesome podcast was recorded at Castaway Studios in Collingwood. Here, we provide affordable, accessible, professional podcasting production facilities to the full range of podcasters, all the way from basic studio hire right through to full season production packages. You can get us on castawaycollingwood@gmail.com or just look up Castaway Studios on all the social medias.